Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Golder, and today we're Masechet Shabbos, Tavtez Zayin. So the three points we're going to focus on. Number one, even though glass is similar to metal, inasmuch as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. Metalware, which is tameh, when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the Rabbanan decreed that it reverts to its old status of tuma. Glassware, which is tameh, when broken down, also becomes tahor. But when it's remade into a new vessel, it doesn't revert to its old status of tumah. The reason is that since the tumah of glassware is only a derabbanan, we don't impose the law of the restoration of the old tumah, which is also a derabbanan. And we're going to learn the reason why the derabbanan did this in the third point. Point number two, Rav Ashi is the opinion that glassware is the lachas of tumah as earthenware, as a klicheres, and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same lachas of tumah as a klicheres, as earthenware, so why then does it contract tumah when it's touched by something tameh on its outer surface, whereas a klicheres, where earthenware only becomes tameh when a tameh object goes inside of it? So the Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass on the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tameh touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel, and the vessel becomes tameh as a result. And point number three, the reason why the rabbis enacted a decree that tameh metalware that became tahor through breakage should revert to its old tumah status when refashioned was as follows. Midaraisa, a metal vessel that became tameh through contact with a corpse or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling of the mechatas, those are the waters containing the ashes of a paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in a mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tameh vessel, which renders it tahor, and then repair it, and piercing a hole in the vessel as well, that would be sufficient to consider it broken. So the rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse, so they decreed that the old tumah status would return when the vessel was repaired. Queen Shalzion tried to use this break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tameh, but the rabbanan told her that the old tumah status returned. All right, so let's review. Number one, even though glass is similar to metal in as much as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. Metalware, which is tameh when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the rabbis decreed that it reverts to its old status of tumah. Glassware, which is tameh when broken down, also becomes tahor, but when it's remade into a new vessel, it does not revert to its old status of tumah. The reason is that since the tumah of glassware is only a derabbanan, we don't impose the law of the restoration of all tumah, which is also only a derabbanan. Number two, Rav Ashi is the opinion that glassware has the halachas of tumah as earthenware and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same halachas of tumah as earthenware as a klicheres, why then does it contract tumah when it's touched by something tameh on the outside of its surface, whereas a klicheres only becomes tameh when a tameh object goes inside of it? The Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass from the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tameh touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel, and the vessel becomes tameh as a result. And point number three, the reason why the rabbis enacted a decree that tameh metalware that became tahor through breakage should revert to its old tumah status when it's refashioned was as follows. Midaraisa, metal vessel became tameh through contact with a corpse or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling the mechatas, those are the waters containing the ashes of the paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in the mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tameh vessel, which renders it tahor, and then repair it, and piercing a hole in the vessel as well. That would be sufficient to consider it broken. So the rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse. So they decreed that the old tumah status would then return when the vessel was repaired. And Queen Shalzion tried to use this break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tameh, but the rabban told her that the old tumah status returned. All right, let's go to our siman. So our siman Tez Zayin is toes. Tez Zayin toes. Here we go. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tameh glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tameh. Once again, in slow motion. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. Toes, that means we're on Dov Tez Zayin. Once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, which reminds us that even though glass is similar to metal in as much as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. metalware, which is tamei when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the rabbanan decreed that it reverts to its old status of tuma. Glassware, which is tamei when broken down, also becomes tahor. But when it's remade into a new vessel, it does not revert to its old tuma. And the reason is that since the tuma of glassware is only a derabbanan, we don't impose the law of restoration of all tuma on it, which is also a derabbanan. So at the queen's direction, her guests start to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass, which reminds us, Rav Ashi is the opinion, that glassware is the halachas of tuma as a klicheres, as earthenware, and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same halachas of tuma as klicheres, then why does it contract tuma when it's touched by something tummy on the outer surface, whereas the klicheres only becomes tummy when a tummy object goes inside of it? The Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass from the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tummy touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel and the vessel becomes tummy as a result. So at the queen's direction, her guests start to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tummy, which reminds us that the reason why the rabbis enacted a decree that tummy metalware, which became tahor through breakage, should revert to its old tuma status when refashion was as follows. Midaraisa metal vessel became tummy through contact with the corpse or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling the mechatas, those are the waters containing the ashes of the paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in the mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tummy vessel, which renders it tahor, and then repair it, and piercing a hole in the vessel as well, that would be sufficient to consider it broken. The rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse, so they decreed that the old tuma status would return when the vessel was repaired. And Queen Shalzion tried to use the break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tameh, but the rabban told her the old tuma status returned. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests start to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tameh. So now it's time for our four blot back chazora. Daf Yud Beis. So the Simra Yud Beis is 12 brothers. Here we go. The 12 holy Kohen brothers. 12 brothers. That means we're on Daf Yud Beis. The 12 holy Kohen brothers who wore their tefillin outside till late Erev Shabbos, which reminds us that a brice in the Academy of Rabbi Shmuel taught the following. A person is permitted to go outside wearing tefillin Erev Shabbos just before nightfall. Rabbi Rav Huna explains that there's no concern that he might wear the tefillin outside after Shabbos begins. Since a person is obligated to touch his tefillin at all times, he's always aware of the presence, and he brings a Kal Vachomer from the tzitz. The tzitz, the head plate of the Kohen Gadol, has only one mention of Hashem's name on it. Yet the Torah says, Vayal mitzchot tamid, and it should be on the Kohen Gadol's forehead constantly, which teaches he should not divert his attention from it. So how much more so should a person not divert his attention from tefillin, which has many more mentions of Kosh Baruch Hu's name in them. So the 12 holy Kohen brothers who wear their tefillin outside till later of Shabbos would always visit the sick on Shabbos, saying Shabbos Melizok, which reminds us it was taught in a brisa. The one who visits the sick person on Shabbos should say, Shabbos Melizok, Rufua Krova Levo. It's Shabbos now, therefore we're preventive from crying out for your recovery, but the healing will come soon. And the Marsha explains, the sick person might think that since tefillah is prohibited on Shabbos because it might arouse weeping, Shabbos is preventing his recovery. Therefore, we reassure him that his recovery is as likely to come on Shabbos without tefillah as would come during the week with tefillah. So they'd always visit the sick on Shabbos saying Shabbos Himalizok and making sure never to sit on the sick person's bed. Because it was taught in the Braisa, one who visits a sick person should not sit on a bed or chair. Rather, he should wrap himself and sit on the ground or a low chair because the Shekhinah is above the head of the sick person. And this is learned from the Pasuk, Hashem Yisedenu al Eres Davai. Hashem will support him on the sick bed. Tosfos explained, though, that this restriction applies only where there's a sick person lying on the ground or on a low bed, since the visitor is sitting on the chair would then be, so to speak, higher than the Shekhinah, which is the patient's head. Daf Yud Gimel. So the Simur Daf Yud Gimel is a bar mitzvah boy. So here we go. The bar mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table, which reminds us of Shimon Gamliel, says that two lodgers can eat at the same table even though one is eating meat and the other is eating milk. Rav Chanin bar Ami said in the name of Shmuel that this is only when they don't know each other and therefore it's unlikely they would take food from one another. So the bar mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments, which reminds us that in the next mission of the Perek, we learned that the Rabbanim were visiting Hanani ben Chizkiyahu ben Garon in his upper chamber. And a vote was taken on a number of issues, Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel, and 18 halachas were enacted on that day. So it concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments and a moving speech on the importance of cherishing one's troubles and resolving contradictions. Because the Gemara provides some background on Hananiah ben Chizkiyahu and his achievements. A Braisa identifies him and his colleagues as the authors of Megillas Tainus. This is a scroll compiled at the end of Bais Sheni, which lists dates that are treated as minor festivals which fasting is prohibited on account of miraculous salvations which occurred on them. The Braisa explains that they wrote the Megillah because they cherished the troubles that befell them. What this means is that they understood that they were fully deserving of the hardships and cherished that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had miraculously saved Klal Yisrael in those days. They therefore established those dates to be celebrated as minor holidays and record them for posterity. And the Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that the Hananiah ben Chizkiyahu should be remembered favorably for reconciling all the seeming contradictions between Sefer Yechezkel and the Torah. He secluded himself in the upper chamber for an extended period of time until he reconciled the various psukim. Sefer Yechezkel would have been hidden away if he hadn't done so. So once again, the Bar Mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments and a moving speech on the importance of cherishing one's troubles and resolving contradictions. Daf Yadol. So the symbol for Daf Yadol is hands. So here we go. A sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim, Yadayim. That reminds us we're on Daf Yadol. A sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim, which reminds us, the seventh enactment was that if one's hands touch Truma, the Truma becomes Pasul, and therefore one's required to wash his hands before touching Truma. In fact, Netilas Yadayim was instituted at three separate times. Shlomo Melech instituted that unrinsed hands were considered Tame when touching Kadshim. They were regarded, though, as Tahor when it came to touching Truma. Hillel and Shammai decreed that unrinsed hands were considered Tame when touching Truma as well, but their decree wasn't accepted. And last, in the upper chamber of the Hananiah ben Chizkiyahu ben Garon, the students of Hillel and Shammai argued about the status of one's hands in regards to Truma. Beis Shammai held that unwashed hands should be considered Tame for Truma and require washing, while Beis Hillel disagreed. When the vote was held, Beis Shammai, being the majority, prevailed. So a sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water, which reminds us that the fourth enactment states that one who washes his head and the greater part of his body with drawn water after he was tovel correctly and was now tahor becomes tameh. And the reason for this was that originally people were tameh would immerse themselves in pools of cave water that were stagnant, which did make them tahor. However, after the immersion, they would then pour over themselves clean water that was drawn from vessels in order to wash away the dirty water. Eventually, people mistakenly started to say that it was the drawn water that purified them, not the cave water. The sages were then concerned that those who are tame would immerse themselves in draw water alone, which is not a kosher mikveh. So to discourage this, the rabbis decreed that one who washes his head and the greater part of his body with drawn water after he was tovel becomes tame. So a sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water as mice nibbling on truma scurried around far away from the Tanakh on the shelf. Which reminds us, the sixth enactment was that a Sefer Torah, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, will make truma which it touches pasul. Where Mesharshi explains that the reason for this was that people used to store their Sefer Torah, Nevi'im and Ksuvim together with their truma, reasoning that it was appropriate because they're both Kodesh, they're very holy. The Rabbanan saw that this practice resulted in the Sfarim becoming damaged by mice that were attracted to the food. They therefore decreed that the scrolls would make the Truma possible in order that people would not store their Truma near them. So once again, a sign about the earliest history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water, as mice nibbling on Truma scurried around far away from the Tanakh on the shelf. Dav Tesvav. So the symbol for Dav Tesvav is a fruit bowl, because Tesvav 2, Tu B'Shvat, and we're using a fruit bowl. So here we go. The fruit bowl reminding us we're on Dav Tesvav. The fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together, which reminds us the Rav Huna state that Hillel and Shammai only argued in three cases. What's the minimum amount of flour required that the dough would be subject to the separation of challah? What's the minimum amount of drawn water, maim she'uvim, that will disqualify a mikvah? And if a woman becomes a nida, is retroactively declared tamei from the time of her last examination. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from chutz la'aretz into the glass bowl. So that reminds us, one of the decrees of the early Tanaim was that the land outside of Eretz Yisrael was to be considered Tameh. There were Gazur Tumal Eretz Ha'amim. The Gemara clarifies the background of this decree. Yossi ben Yoezu Yisrael and Yossi ben Yochanan Yishushalayim decreed that the land outside Eretz Yisrael was considered Tameh. Their concern was that since the idolaters did not mark their graves, any place in their lands was suspect of containing a grave, and unmarked graves were also more likely to be plowed over, resulting in scattered bone fragments. Therefore, if Truma came in contact with its dirt, the truma would not be allowed to be eaten. However, the truma was not allowed to be burned either. In the words of the Gemara, the truma is suspended. The Rabban of 80 years before the destruction of Bais Sheni later expanded the decree to include its airspace as well. They were concerned about the graves imparting tumah via roof tumah to someone passing over it. Finally, in Usha, the rabbis added a stringency and required burning truma that came in contact with its dirt. However, truma that came in contact with the airspace of Eretz Amim, of the non-Jewish nations, would still remain with its status of being suspended. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from Chutzlarz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. Which reminds us that Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan decreed that glassware should be susceptible to tumah. Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Ish Lakish that the reason why they enacted this decree is that since the glassware comes from sand, a type of earth, it should have the same halacha as earthenware, a klicheres, which is susceptible to tumah. So once again, the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from chutzlarz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. All right, so now let's finish up with our pop quiz of 10 questions. Here we go. Number one. Which daf do we have the sixth enactment that a Sefer Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim posel truma? That's on daf Yedalad. Good. Number two. Where do we learn that a top of a 9 tefachim post in Rosh Hashanah Rabim has the status of Rosh Hashanah Rabim since people use it to adjust their loads? That's on daf Ches. Great. Number three. Where do we learn that glassware that was tummy broken and then refashioned does not revert to its old status of tumah? That's on daf Tezayin. Good. Number four. Where do we learn that one should not sit on a sick person's bed because the Shekhinah is there? That's on daf Yud Beis. Great. Number five. Where do we have the Mishnah mentioning that there were 18 enactments? That's on daf Yud Gimel. Great. Number six. Where do we learn the reason for the Rabbanan that tummy metalware that was broken and repaired reverts to its old tumah status was out of concern for disuse of the mechatas? That's on daf Tezayin. Great. Number seven. Where do we learn about the three times that Netilas Yadam was instituted? That's on daf Yadalad. Good. Number eight. Where do we learn that when one gives a gift, one needs to inform the recipient of the gift? The example being Hashem giving Klal Yisrael Shabbos. That's on daf Yud. Good. Number nine. Where do we learn the reason why, according to Rav Ashi, that glassware contracts truma when touched on its outer surface is because of its transparency? That's on daf Tezayin. Good. And number 10, where do we have the fourth enactment that one who showers in drawn water after going to the mikveh becomes tameh? That's on daf Yudalad. Great. That concludes our pop quiz. Just a reminder to the All Daffers that today there will be available on All Daff the grand pop quiz, which is a pop quiz on the previous week's material, as well as the much grander pop quiz, which is the accumulative quiz and everything we've done from Daf Base until the present Daff. It'll be under the series tab under Zichru Quizzes. Rabbi Avraham Goldberg from Zichru wishing you a great day and great learning.